money is keeping you well with the rain and everything. Firstly, Shingen enemy is not a pure rain, but that shows good signs of good luck for 2010. Today's agenda is only one item. I'll be guided by yourselves as members, how we are going to engage with the input, but we can take 30 minutes or an hour. I think we can be through, but depending on what you want to get from the department, we can stay here even about 11, 12, I don't mind. That's what we are paid here for. But we would like then to check the apologies. We only have two, ne? The apology from the minister. She's attending to another agent meeting. And then we've got Honorable Tindo will be late. And Mutau, he has taken the card from the service. Slau and Tindo. Slau and Mutau are attending the other committee on service delivery. So they are not going to be with us because that committee is meeting now. But I do think that 2, 4, 5. We are okay for a meeting. So let us then hand over to the Director General, because she's here, to introduce the team as well as deal with the presentation. Thank you for coming back to us anyway, because it is one of the promises that we are waiting from yourself from last year to say we must get rid of this issue, and then we hope that we'll get public support today. So over to you, DJ.
Thank you so much, Chair. The team that I have is the DDG responsible for hydrocarbon and energy planning, Mr. DJ Somakubela, Chief Director of Hydrocarbon, Mr. Mkize, who's going to make the presentation, and the Acting Director of Policy, Jabla, and then Mr. Litlali Pasha Musaka. I always yes. The Deputy Director for Petroleum Policy, and also Ms. Paul Madima, she's the Chief Energy Officer, and then Kiti, our Parliamentary Officer, and Nantasa Ndebele, who is the Office Manager. And as I said, basically we are going to be making a presentation that is going to cover what was done on the pilot study and also what were the LPG published regulations and what were the comments and what is the progress. And I will hand over to Ms. Mkize.
Thank you very much.
And to all the members of the portfolio committee, honorable members of the portfolio committee, I'd like to thank the opportunity that has been granted us to present on the LPG. I'll start off by looking at the outline of the presentation. The introductions have already been made, and we are going to then move to the general overview, then look at the liquefied petroleum gas pilot project, to the projects done in Atteridgeville and Tweefontein in Mpumalanga, and then look at the regulations in respect of maximum retail price of LPG for residential customers, then look a little bit on the challenges, the next steps from our side, and then have an opportunity for questions, comments, guidance, and discussions. To start off with, I would say that LPG, as we normally call it, sometimes we call it LP gas, sometimes we just simply call it gas, it consists mainly of what is called propane and butane. It's part of the elements of the carbon chain. And it's used primarily for domestic and commercial applications, including sometimes you find them the people using it to power vehicles. It is gas, but is kept liquid by being subjected to pressure. And then as you apply pressure, the liquid the gas turns into liquid and is kept in that fashion. And when you now want to use it, as you release it from the cylinder, it then turns that to gas, and you can be able to use it to cook or heat. And there is also gas, natural gas, which is normally lighter than air. It's different from LPG. It can also be liquefied, the gas, either by way of compression when you get CNG, or you can have it as LNG, and that gas is kept at low temperatures to make it liquid. But today, which is compressed natural gas, but today we'll mainly be using, we are talking about liquefied petroleum gas. And sometimes I'll just use the name gas without qualifying it, but the reference is liquefied petroleum gas. General overview, I'll say, why talk of liquefied petroleum gas? If you look at our white paper on energy policy of 1998, it advocates for an energy mix which states that there's going to be diversification of household energy carriers to enhance energy security, and to promote a better life for all South Africans through eradication of energy poverty, and facilitate universal access to basic energy services, and contribute to the achievement of the Millennium Development Goals. Gas is also seen as a cleaner and more modern form of energy as compared to biomass, looking at the environmental considerations. For example, there's been a report of people getting ill and deaths that are related to inhalation of hazardous emissions through the use of biomass in households. And the efficiency of LPG for thermal use also, when you look at especially cooking and heating, particularly when compared to electricity, because with electricity, especially from our side, you've got to take the coal, burn the coal, and in burning the coal, the efficiency is about 35% from the then, or 34% round about there, and then you take that and you transmit it. You also get some losses in the transmission. Then it goes into your hot plate. You still have got some losses there. Whereas with gas, you can take it directly to use it in the hot plate or the gas heater or gas heating stove. Then with domestic use also, there was consideration of the inelastic domestic energy demand. Because when people have got to cook their food, warm their homes when it is cold, or use warm water, they've got no other alternative but to do those things. And therefore, even when the price changes, people are left with little option really in terms of what to do. They will still have to use the energy. It's just a matter of saying that you need to look at then shifting the demand mainly from one carrier to another. For example, in this case, as we know, the challenges that we're facing with electricity, that also provides us an opportunity for demand side management where we can use gas instead of electricity. And looking at from our side, which is one of the imperatives of the government of the day, is that business and employment opportunities for historically disadvantaged South Africans need to be considered in developing all this, and we're taking due cognizance of that imperative. Roughly looking at this energy by households in the residential sector, we see that 32% was for water heating, and then space heating, cooking, and then the lighting is 5% really, and others, which is fridges, radios, cell phone charging, etc., that is 10%. And if you look at it, the whole 85% is mainly water heating and cooking, which is and space heating, which is thermal use, in fact. So the 85% mainly goes to thermal use. Although this is an older source, it still remains, the bigger picture still remains the same. And these are the challenges that we have if you look at electricity. If you look in the morning, people getting ready to go to work and using where there's this shift in the load. So we need to shift that by using an appropriate thermal energy source, which in this case we argue that it is LPG. And then In this way, we'll be able to deal with the peaks. Unfortunately, when you look at the global gas use, as you can see in South Africa, we don't feature there. We have got so small a demand. In fact, we have got less than a kilogram per year per capita utilization or consumption of LP gas, compared to about 37 kilograms per capita in Brazil and 34 per kilogram per capita in Morocco. And then why the low usage was ourselves is the prices. And the prices are high, and really very high. And then the other question is to see, where then do I get this LP gas from? Because it's easy to talk of dealing with the pricing, but whatever we deal with the price, we deal with due cognizance of the availability of gas or the supply of the gas. If you look at the fact is that gas on a liter per liter or kg per kg basis with petrol is still high, with the markup of about 177. This is what we observed in March 2008 when you look at the figures, where gas is about 22.88 cents per kilogram markup on it, compared to 176.97, almost 177 rand per kilogram. And then some facts that are related to LP gas. From our side, we're saying that we've got this challenge, but our sources of LP gas is natural gas for liquids, that is from PetroSA, the GTL facility there, and also the coal to liquids, CTL, for Sasol in Secunda. Those facilities, they produce the gas. And then the four refineries that we have, which is the SAFREF in Durban, NREF also in Durban, adjacent to each other, and then Chevron here, the Chevron refinery here in Cape Town, and the Natref refinery in Sasolburg. They also produce gas because it is part and parcel of the product slate that comes out of refining. And then we also import gas. There is importation in Richards Bay, Durban, and the Eastern Cape facilities, but they are still inadequate, particularly when one looks at the throughput that you are able to get the gas from the facilities that where they deliver the gas. And there are various epic gas import facilities in planning stage, which people come to talk to us about, but they're saying that the costs are prohibitive. It's part of the thing that we'll have to also address going forward. In terms of imports, the potential import sources will be places like Angola, Nigeria, Algeria, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar, in terms of where we can look at getting LP gas. Just stated this because of the importance when one looks at our international engagements and in dealing with the issue of securing supply. The supply chain that we have currently, we, as I've indicated, the refineries from which we get, as you can see, the markup, we end up with we've got about 90 going to the household, where it's the indicative cost margin of cents per liter. As you can see, the price keeps piling up. Though these are the odd figures, but that is the situation that we have, that there are so many middlemen in between, there are many distributors. And in the process, you've got a lot of transportation of the steel itself, because the cylinder is mainly the steel, and then you've got gas in there, and you end up transporting the steel, the steel and less of the gas. And we then said way back we needed to revolutionize this and look at a different business model, where we've got manufacturing and then we've got transportation, primary transportation, where we take this gas to a cylinder filling management center, where we've got the cylinder filling plant located closer to the consumers. So in other words, it's more of taking the gas to the people, and therefore have a bulk transportation of gas and distribute closer to the people. And in doing that, we're going to look at the same pricing model or price build-up that we have for petrol in terms of import and import parity, and then distributing it from the port of entry going inland. And in the beginning, we also want to look at having those areas exclusive. But at the moment, we're still having an open kind of business model to follow, but still within the parameters that we want to achieve in terms of mainly transporting the gas, other not necessarily the steel. So the approach was that we're going to have the price regulation and then to reduce the current industry-wide high prices. Some of us will remember, in 2006 we had shortages in gas, and at the same time there were problems with the very high price, because the prices were exorbitant and people were saying that they needed to get some protection from government. And it is from that perspective that we then said we're going to regulate the price. So we're regulating reluctantly, but we had to regulate. I'm talking now from a shift that was there, because there was this thinking that even the liquid fuels market is going to be liberalized as we go along. But then you cannot liberalize the market without due regard of the conditions, the prevailing circumstances in terms of now and in the near future, and therefore you must act in accordance to that. And then we need to investigate the sharing of logistic value chain and invest cylinder filling options, which we have done by way of having the pilot plants that we ran in Atteridgeville and Clairefontaine. And then ensure access by the poor, availing the cylinders and appliances to the low-income household, and focus on the lower rungs of our society in terms of the earnings that for them that can afford LPG, and then promote LPG, because the challenge was always that you cannot promote something that you don't have, because when you promote and people take it up, it becomes difficult for you. So we needed to be able to take due cognizance of the pricing to say this is within reach of people in terms of price, and at the same time we find ways of sourcing the LPG and ensure that there is the appliances are safe. On the issue of the safety of appliances, I just want to stress the fact that any fuel by its very nature is classified as a hazardous substance. So a lot of safety goes around the issue of appliances and the handling thereof. And as we have the free basic energy policy, we were of the opinion that when we've got this properly developed, then we can move to have the inclusion of the gas as part of the free basic alternative energy policy, and that it be available to people in that manner. The road travel, that's why you can see there's been a lot of interaction coming back from 2003, and there have been workshops like in 2004, and in annual conferences there was a move that we find ways of mainstreaming the gas, get the gas to be also used by low-income households. There have been also projects that were run by the LP Gas Safety Association of Southern Africa. And there was an agreement in 2005 between the department and LP Gas Association to have the LP gas sold at a price of paraffin less 2 rands in trying to promote, although this did not really got realized the way we had envisaged. But we then went on in 2006, initiated the issue of pilot projects, and then in 2007 we actually had the pilot project going. In all these presentations, we also had a presentation to the PPC in March 2008 in terms of our vision with the gas. And the draft regulations were published in 2008, March, and there was a stakeholder engagement in May 2008, in fact, and then the LPGS conference that was held in March 2009 confirmed the fact that we are going ahead with the regulation of the gas price. And now, as we speak, we published the LPGS price regulations and working rules in November 2009, and a stakeholder engagement was held on the 2nd of February this year. The pilot that we had, in fact, is that successes we've seen with the, because where the pilot in, sorry, in where the pilot, as I said, in two areas, that is in Tembisile, where we look at 10,000 households taking up LPG, and then we're looking at 20,000 households in Tswane, in Accraville, and with that, about 90%, there was a 90% household connection, that is people that registered and used the LPG. The department facilitated the LPG upliftment contract for service provider with the refiner, Sasol, who provided that the LPG. And there are two filling plants that were constructed and commissioned and are still operational. The use of gas was accepted by communities where the project is located, and local people were employed throughout the phase of the pilot, from construction of the bottle filling plants to the sale of the gas as it is currently being operational. And about 1,377 megawatt shift in Tswane and 2,607 megawatt hour shift in Tswane from electricity to gas as part of proving the demand side management. And then the safe usage of LPG was the result of training was also achieved. That we note because there was no accident in these pilot areas. Both municipalities have expressed interest in expanding this project to cover broader areas within their respective jurisdictions. And draft LPG regulations were just but one of the outcomes that we've seen from the study. And then in terms of the weaknesses that we observed is that the management of the project by service provider has not been satisfied. There have been some problems in terms of cash flow and the management capabilities. And there were some contractual breaches, like the erratic supply of LPG in one instance, and sometimes things were also, but maybe miscommunication with the customers or the household in terms of where then they would find their gas, like where they use local retailers to be able to distribute. And the poor marketing of the project sometimes in terms of getting more people to use LPG, more consumption rather than just having the LPG and use it. Because that relates to the issue also of a situation where one cylinder usage is equivalent to three cylinders, because a person will take a cylinder and stay with it, and then for the person using the supplier will have to have three cylinders just for the supply of one person, because the turnover of cylinders is not that quick. And then the appliance distribution to household was also poorly managed in some instances. And the poor quality of appliances like the sapphire heater that had to be returned, because that there was that subsidy of providing heaters for the people. The scope for project management upskilling by all involved is also necessary, that we saw it on both sides. Lessons learned from the pilot. I think the key lesson that we learned was that the adopted distribution model, bringing the plant closer to the market, is possible and could result in significant price reduction. Right, when it comes to the price regulation, the rationale for the price underpinning the price was, as I've stated, particularly in 2006, there was this public outcry about the exorbitant prices in the face of unavailability of gas. And also with the price, there are also issues that pertain to switching costs, because people have got stoves, they've got heaters that are electricity driven, and then now when you want them to then use gas, that is those are also challenges. And then from our side, we wanted to also to realize the policy objectives of energy diversification, and also the just the whole issue of the energy mix. And then to get an appropriate pricing model for gas in South Africa to form a base on which to develop and expand the gas market, because you can't talk of expansion of the market when the prices are not right, when the gas is not available. And then the improvement of affordability and accessibility of LPG, because what you cannot afford is actually not accessible to you. And then the pricing structure, in terms of the price regime that you wanted to, in terms of the principles, was that the pricing structure would be similar to that of petrol. We're going to use the import parity pricing mechanism, where we consider the gas to be imported, looking at the fact that we're also short on gas in any way, based on our demand. And then the use of the zonal prices, as you move in, for example, from the coast to inland, you'll have to go through the zone exactly the same way, manner that we are doing with petrol, and then in that way we promote the importation of gas also into the country, because the refineries on their own are not able to supply all that we need in terms of the gas. We're talking in the range maybe of about 250 million tons per annum that we're talking about here, and then I don't think that the refineries can be able to supply. And the other challenge is that the components that make up LP gas, you can also include in petrol as part of the petrol. So if they are going to get something better putting it there in petrol, they will tend to ship it in that direction. That is why in winter you also face that challenge, whereas in summer they've got a surplus sometimes from their side. But then we need to be able to manage that. And then also, the basis would be that we use the existing refinery gate price approach. There's already a regulation of the gas at the refinery gate price. So we said we're not going to tamper with that. We're going to take it as a given and work therefrom. And then the basis also would be to be totally transparent and have a cost reflective pricing mechanism. The licensing of LPG, the gas market players, is also in place, but what we want to do now is we want to go and have a review and tighten specifically the gas market, the whole value chain, in terms of how we want to license them, and in view of also our proposed model of supply. And then determination of an appropriate pricing model, taking into account the investment cost. Where we are going to look at the rate of return on investment commensurate with the risk, and the average cylinder filling plant considered for this purpose was a 25,000 kilogram. This is a medium-sized plant. And then the return on asset on wholesale margin, we pegged it at 15%. This was done after going through some of the studies to see other jurisdictions, how they make the wholesale margin and the retail margin. In both cases, we use 15%. And the shortest value chain, as I've said, is the objective of that is to reduce the number of middlemen in the value chain, and also minimize steel transportation instead of transporting the gas itself. The consultation process that we went through thus far was that the draft regulations were published for public comment on 28 March 2008. Comments were received from the industry players and also the big players like Afrox, Total Gas, SAPIA, South African Petroleum Industry Association, and the Petroleum Retailers Association Forum, and then the Gas State Association of Southern Africa. And on the 27th of May, we had a workshop, and one of the key concerns that they had is people from the industry players, was around the issue of the cylinders not being included in that regulation then in terms of the price structure. And the working rules were also not discussed, because we sent out the regulations, we said we're still going to develop the working rules. Now, the challenge that we had, well, one thing that you would not, whenever you're engaging the industry, or the epic gas industry, and you don't talk about cylinders, One thing I've observed is like you have not said a thing. And once the discussion on cylinders is over, it's like there is no other debate. The meeting is finished. It's because of the challenges that they face with regard to the cylinders. There is this swapping of cylinders, people holding other people's cylinders to keep them out of the market. So the management of the cylinders poses a big challenge generally for this industry. And for you to get into this industry, you must buy, you must get the cylinders upfront. But then when you are in business now, a person buys a cylinder, fills in, and keeps the cylinder. He doesn't buy it, but he pays a deposit for the cylinder. Keep the cylinder at home, use it a little bit because it's winter time, and then he stops using it. So the, your cylinder, as the epic as seller, you're sitting with your customer, and your customer is not going to give it back because you can use that gas to somebody else. So in terms of the return on a per cylinder basis, it's very low. That is why they talk of having three cylinders for a supply equivalent to one person. So that is also another challenge. We've looked at things, maybe also having what we call white cylinders, where I can use your cylinder. You don't have a cylinder mark, let's say BP gas or easy gas or whatever. But that poses a challenge from a point of safety to say, if now there's a problem, who are you going to hold accountable for that? And there's also this problem of cross-filling. Someone takes your cylinder, fills your cylinder, but is not checked what the problem is with the cylinder. You know, some of the cylinders are just kept in the garages, they are there, and they are, it's very, very unsafe. And the problem with gas is what I call the bomb scare, in that when it comes to gas, you know, with paraffin and all that, we know the problems that we have. We know the fires. But the problem is that with the fire, the challenge, that, the difference that with the fire, you just get a fire, you can have a fire here and maybe you can extinguish it. But the problem with the gas is that it's like a bomb, and it advertises itself how bad it is. You know, the other one, you can be able to contain sometimes. So that is a problem. People are just scared of using gas because of the, what I call a bomb scare effect. And then from last year, then we looked at publishing the regulations and the working rules together. We published them on the 12th of November, and we called upon public comment, which the date was closing on the 7th of December. Unfortunately, because we saw that it was a time for, it was almost a time for recess, so we're going to the festive season, and it was, people were going to misconstrue us as having planned not to properly consult them by having a consultation during the festive season. So we could not have a stakeholder engagement, otherwise we could have done this thing in December and we get over and done with it by now. But then we had then to have a stakeholder engagement only on the 2nd of February. That is when we then had the stakeholder workshop, where we discussed issues, we discussed the comments with the role players. And I must say that when it comes to the rest of the comments, one thing that I was a bit unhappy about was when it came to the actual pricing, the figures that were put forth for comments from the industry players, looking at the kind of resources that they have. I don't think that the comments really were in sync with the capabilities and the resources that they have, because they even pleaded to say, can we then have further discussions on the pricing issue, which I think that they should have applied their minds, looking at the resources that they have. Because sometimes we have this problem of people hoping that you are not going ahead with some kind of legislation or regulation, and maybe thinking that we're going to change our minds. And in this case, we're not going to change our minds. We're moving on with the regulation, and then we're thinking that if we regulate the price, this is the most appropriate time, because it's not the crunch time for demand. And if there are some niggling issues, things, or some teething problems, we can be able to rectify them before we really the peak demand time. So comments were received from stakeholders like Aprox, Chevron, and Gas and Equipment, which is and Eagle Gas and others. The comments included things that pertain to margins, the cost and recovery of such costs. And there was the one thing that we noticed that was that people were complaining about the maximum refinery gate price of LPG. They were talking mainly about its inappropriate because it's linked to the price of lead replacement petrol, 93 octane. So they were complaining about that. And then there was also the issue of cylinder management in the country, where people are complaining about hoarding of cylinders and cross-feeding, as I've said. They are every person in the industry is very passionate about this issue, and fairly so. So the ethics regulations and working rules have been sent to the state law advisor to solicit legal opinion. I just want, as Mr. Jarasa, want to stress that when you look at our regulations, the regulations are like the chassis of a car, and then the working rules are like the engine of the car. We're mainly, when it comes to regulations, we were done with regulations. The only reason why we had to, when we published the second time, we had to publish both the regulations and the working rules for comment, was that so that if there was any change on the working rules that would impact the regulations, we can just change the regulations to and go on. Because even during the discussion, there wasn't much really for us to change when it comes to the regulations as the draft regulations as published to solicit public comment. The summary of the price structure is that you have the maximum gate price if you look at the price of rand per kilogram, ₹5.19. Then the primary transport, we're looking at 45 cents additional for that on a per kilo basis. And then operating expenses being ₹3.32, working capital as you go, and then the depreciation for the plant as you include. And then I'm talking about the 35,000 kilogram filling plant, which is a mixed size bulky filling facility. And then the cost margin of 161, and then the retail margin of 192, and then including the VAT, you end up with ₹16.07. The prevailing selling price is currently around ₹26 per kilogram. Yeah, in some instances, as the DG is saying, it escalates even to ₹32 per kilogram. And come winter, when you've got a shortage and you're running around from one service station to another, from shop to shop, you can even get it higher than that. And then the operating, this is actually just a breakdown of the operating expenses, where here we argue on the maybe how many people you need to have, how many staff you need, who must you have one plant operator or two plant operators, must we have two drivers. These are the kind of arguments that we enter into. But in as far as we are concerned, we haven't got any convincing arguments thus far to change from what we're presenting to the committee. And also, I just want to allude to the fact that sometimes when we talk, with the industry players, there can be some confusion in some instances because of the value chain that they are currently using. And we are saying that we are giving you so much for primary transportation. If you decide on your own, we are rewarding an activity and not just individuals. If you want to have many individuals, bear in mind that we're looking at a cost that is, let's say, for example, for primary transportation, this is the amount that we need from you. If it's 45 cents per kilogram, this is what we're looking for, irrespective of whether you do it yourself or you want someone else to do it on your behalf. And then this is just working capital, where we look at the debtors, where it's 20 rand per kilogram, and the stock cost of 10 days, which is 6 rand per kilogram. This was also based on a 3-to-1 in terms of the number of cylinders you are going to need for that one customer. And then we're looking at this, the assets there that we are going to have the site. We are approximating to be around a million rands, and then the building, 2.1 million, and then the plant, we're looking at the filling, the plant of 400,000, and then 9 kg cylinders. That is the 380 there that we have, looking at 600, 200 of them. So I've got 9 kg, 19 kg, and 48 kg cylinders. And this is just the prices for the cylinders. And the vehicles, where we said we're going to have two vehicles here. And then the deposit, this will be the deposit on cylinders that we envisage. Then the potential impact of price regulation, we're saying that the reduced price will in short and medium to long term increase demand. We think that when you get the price right, demand is going to increase. And then it will also induce industry growth and facilitate investment in the infrastructure. Because the challenge all the time in the energy sector is this infrastructure, the physical infrastructure, where people await government to take some steps in terms of providing the essential infrastructure, because people are saying it's too risky for them to enter in because the regulatory framework is not tight. This year we're also trying to provide that regulatory certainty. And if something is not right, let's then work together and correct what things that are not right. And then to create opportunities for historical disadvantaged South Africans to participate in the sector and reduce electricity consumption, which is part of the demand side management. The creation of jobs would be part and parcel of that. The promotion of cleaner, safer, efficient, and affordable asphalt energy carriers, we see it as being one of it if one considers especially the LPG as compared to people using coal, like in the high-belt area, where there is a lot of coal usage, where people are making his baula there. And then to provide a choice also for households, especially those who use carriers that cause indoor pollution, as I've mentioned, coal, wood, etc. The challenges that we have, as I've been alluding to throughout the presentation, is the inadequate gas infrastructure. We need to have those filling plants. I've also seen other areas where they make where they reticulate gas, the empty gas. But they currently, I've seen it only in flats where they've got one big storage tank, and then in a block of flats, then they just use the LT gas. They are doing it in Sentin. I've seen it in Sentin, two blocks of flats, and it's working very well. And then the holding of cylinders by competitors. I would say this is a general management problem. It's like if you were to sell cold drinks and someone comes, he buys all your drinks and just stores them in his backyard, and then all of a sudden you must finance, get new bottles. At the same time, you're thinking that maybe you're planning, you're telling yourself people are buying your product when they are not. See, these are some of the challenges that need to be dealt with in terms of cylinder. And then the control of distribution channels by existing LPGs refiners. We've got a problem here. This is a general empowerment problem. It's applicable also to liquid fuels. We've got a situation where we've got what we call wholesalers. The empowered wholesalers. So you get the HDSA wholesalers, but an HDSA wholesaler must still buy from the wholesaler of a refiner. So in other words, it's more like you are buying from your competitor. You can find ways of squeezing you out of the market. So, and what happens, but ultimately, it's more like you are not actually buying it from the refinery gate. You are buying it from the wholesaling arm of the refiner. So this is the kind of challenge that we have. It's also, I'll say it's pervasive, also liquid fuels for the same thing. Also here, when it comes to gas, we've got also this challenge that we have alluded to this problem to the industry. We said to them, we need to engage and discuss on this thing and find solutions to it before we find ourselves having to impose a solution. Let's work together to get a proper solution. And the perception or reputation of gas, as I've alluded to earlier, the bombs gas issue. The next step that we from our side is that we are looking forward to promulgating the regulations before the end of this financial year. We are awaiting comments from the state law advisor, which we are going to incorporate, and then we are going to gazette the regulations being translated into a second language as required by law. And then we are then also going to review the LPG licensing regime. Other aspects of the regulatory framework we have to look at, particularly the HDSA empowerment of it, also to look at a system, if there is a need maybe to have a system particularly focusing on LPGs. We'll have to review the maximum refinery gate price. Looking at the complaints that we have received, we'll have to consider that review of the gate price and improve security of supply of LPGs. With this one, I just want to stress maybe that the price that we are looking at, other than being low, I would say is also being appropriate, in the sense that we need to have import facilities, and those import facilities they cost a lot of money, and if we want to have security of supply, we also need to make sure that we compensate accordingly. So we are looking at the import facilities and storage and distribution logistics to get the gas from the port of entry to other areas. Afrox has new facilities that it reaches Bay, and we are also going to also work with the industry in terms of obtaining the right figures so we can be able to have regulations that address the problem. Because always when you are regulating, the challenge is to have the requisite information for you to have proper regulation. We find that the regulated entities have got that more information, but at the same time, the willingness to part with that information or the right information becomes a challenge. Then we will then have look at including gas in the free basic alternative energy policy. Then we'll have ongoing monitoring and enforcement. One of the things that we have noticed is that there is a need for tighter cooperation between among stakeholders, mainly between ourselves, also the Department of Labor, because they are the ones that are responsible for the safety aspects of gas, as they are the people that are overseeing the Occupational Health and Safety Act, and also with the Safety Association and other role players in respect of cylinder management and safety issues of cylinders. Thanks. It's been a long presentation from my side, but I had to do it this way. My apologies. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you, Kabazela. We ask for it because you said we want to get the regulations and want to get the background behind it. That's why I left you to deal with the explanation. But I can see also it's one of the issues that you deal with them with passion and commitment and explaining even others that are not there. So, I mean, I couldn't then stop you because it's what we required. But thank you very much, Kabazel. We've been joined by two members, Honorable Busi Sokhadebe and Lance Krele. Already started with, I'm sure, but you know that we said we want to get a briefing this year, because we're not happy with the slow process of the regulation. That's why it started. So I'll give to the members, I can be last, so that I don't take it on. I've seen the hand of Mr. Ross, and Khatebe, Mapela, and Frida. Yeah, Atibe. Those are the hands that I've seen. Let's take the first round and get the answers.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. McKeezy, thank you for your presentation. I think I understand a bit more about the LPGs now. I'd just like to ask the question regarding the consultation process. On the 7th of December 2009, there was time to comment. Everybody knows you went into recess, and then you rescheduled in terms of consultation for stakeholders' engagement. Can you give us more clarity regarding the stakeholders' engagement and how they felt about specifically the operating expenses, you know, the layout, the working capital, the gross margins? Were this presented to those stakeholders, and were they happy with this amount as presented in terms of driving a feasible and sustainable business? Thank you.
Thanks, Chef. The apologies for arriving late. There was just a few questions that you get clarity on. I just said that I think we have the challenge of having more of these refineries. I'm trying to check maybe in terms of your sources, how big is your source of getting the gas, and what are the possibilities of expanding your refineries so that you can maybe to at least have more gas to provide. But also, in terms of your monitoring strategy, I just want to check in terms of, you know, because you must have these systems. You just explained now that you've got these two wholesalers that are also selling to one another. What are the process of ensuring that, you know, there is no exploitation between the two, and also that will escalate to the consumer, that will be able to use the gas, so that you can be able to monitor the systems, because once one gets exploited, will ensure that it exploits the other. The other issue in terms of your piloting project. I'm so pleased that you also took one of these pilot projects in Pumala. What makes me to just appreciate that is that you took it to one of the rural areas where these people, they can be able to use it mostly. But I want to check in terms of your educational strategy. What strategy have you used to educate these people? How safe is this thing? And ensuring that at the least people are aware that this bomb scare is not just an issue that people have to concern. It's just that they have to use the safety precaution, because I think it's one of the other measures that you must be able to use. And if you can just take a look in terms of the most of the consumers of the gas, these catering companies, they're using this gas in most cases, because they have to cook those food in terms of, you know, preparing them in the morning. And they're using the gas because it's using friendly and quicker to ensure to cook. So I'm trying to check in terms of your educational systems that you've done. Lastly, your job creation processes. I just want to check how many job opportunities that you're going to provide in terms of these things, because I didn't get it clearly. You said you're going to provide job opportunities, but the amount, how many job opportunities that you expect, and to ensure that you mitigate with also the pronouncement of the president in ensuring that there's enough job opportunities for people, and how, what is the sustainability of those jobs? Sir, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to welcome the presentation. Some of my questions have been already touched, but I want to check now on the identified business of the pilot project. Are there any steps taken when the contractor are breaching their services? And the other question is on page 23. As we know that we use gas in most cases, I see that you omitted or you don't want to use 14 kg. Is there any reason for that? Because it's only 9 and 9 and 19 to 48. So is there any reason for phasing out now the 14 kg? Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. I thought I came early so that I can catch the first swim, but I think at this time I was wrong. Chairperson, thank you. And thank you, Mr. Mkhize, for your wonderful presentation. And somehow it also scared me because of this bomb scare. I was even thinking of buying a gas stove. I saw a beautiful gas stove. The other one has got six plates, the other one has got four. But after you have presented, I feel very scared. I then thought using gas really is not the safest thing. When thinking that I'm here in Cape Town and my guests will be working at home, and then I hear that the whole house has blown. Oh, it's scary. But otherwise, what I wanted to check was when you talk of this gas, do you think Basanjo Magogo is better than using the gas stove for what? Because it's also safer and cleaner it cleans the air better than ordinary, making an ordinary mbaula. When we come, you spoke of the gas cylinders. Yes, it's true. The gas cylinders won't be empty quickly because it takes a long time. It doesn't get finished quickly. And also when you buy it being expensive, you won't push it to go quickly so that you can exchange your gas cylinder. That's just the unfortunate part for the consumers and also the suppliers. That's just a comment on that one. Thank you so much, Jefferson.
Okay, from my side, it's just one. Your stakeholder consultation, to me, you seem to be consulting those that are in business. Because you say Afrox others. What about those who want to enter the sector and also just the consumers who are at the end of the day, the ones that are experiencing a lot of problems? What consultative measures to encourage them maybe to do this? Secondly, is the state law advisors, when did you take this to the state law advisors and when are they envisaging to bring it back? Because as far as I understand them, you can take it forever there. And they'll claim they're busy, they're doing what, but they're very slow. And so when are you envisaging that back? If you have an answer, or the DG can answer, or Makube, any one of you. But also, I must say that gas is something that we are all scared of. Because you associate it with the explosion most of the time. But equally so, the electricity to me is also dangerous. But once you are trained how to use it and whatever, then you become used to it. But there are still houses that get bent down because of something, I don't know, elements, whatever, and other things. It's just that I'm sure we need much more awareness, campaigns, and education that will be able to make us to get into this particular gas. Gas can be used safely in many countries. In India, there's a lot of gas on different things in other countries. It just depends how we do it, I'm sure. But the scary part is there. It's only that you use it in weddings or in funerals because you have to cook in a bigger state. So your two plates is not enough or whatever. So people tend then to use the gas. But that is the biggest challenge. Lance?
Yeah. Thanks. I apologize for coming late. I'm in another committee as well. I have to jump between it. And obviously I missed out on some of the discussion. I mean, I must say I'm one of the consumers who has switched over to gas, in fact, I cook with gas. And it's much better as well. I think a lot of people that actually cook a lot say that it's actually much better to cook because you can control the heat, and it is a much better form of doing it. But my question around this is, there's also other sources of gas. I mean, the constraint that we seem to face in South Africa, though, is that we don't seem to have much resources in terms of gas in the country. And obviously that's a constraint towards us rolling this out in a huge way. I know that Mozambique has a large amount of gas, and I think Namibia has also found a lot of gas off it. Is there plans in place to build pipelines to try and get that gas down to South Africa? I mean, and also, are we using the gas off Mozambique in the best way in terms of turning it into liquid with Sasol's process? Or should we be looking in the long term at actually tapping into that gas and using it for household consumption? I'm just wondering, I mean, we talk about cylinders here. I know that in England, for instance, they've got an extensive gas pipeline network that actually pipes gas to households straight. Is that something that we should be considering in the long term? Is it something that is feasible so we can get away from cylinders? And then I'm also wondering whether we can't be tapping some of the gas, for instance, from landfill sites, which I know we're using as current CDM projects. I know there's a bit of controversy around that. But I think at the moment, a lot of that gas has been wasted. In fact, it's just been flared off. Can we be looking at tapping that? And then also looking at biogas digesters, which I think is a great integrated system, which particularly in rural areas, we can really look at using the kind of the waste products to then generate the biogas digesters. I'm so interested in that.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My most concern is about the people who stay in poverty or live in poverty, and also those households who don't have, who have the privilege to have a car or a vehicle to drive to go to buy the gas. So the distance of people must walk is very far to go to buy those gas, and the price is already expensive. That's my main concern.
Okay, so thank you, Chairperson. I will just take the bigger picture ones, and then he's just going to go into the detail on the other one. I think definitely, members, the issues, the big idea issues are quite important. And to that extent, we are looking at the whole LPG strategy, because we needed them, therefore, to feel that the industry is comfortable with the regulations. Then we move on and say, what is going to be our LPG strategy? What is going to be the rollout strategy? As a very, very broad point, we want to move the provision of the distribution networks closer to people, rather than for the distribution network to be as far away as possible. So therefore, one of the things that we have discussed around, obviously, is the import facilities. That's going to be quite important. But also with regards to the neighbors, you're absolutely totally right, because we have a responsibility to clean the environment. For example, in Angola, when they get crude oil out, they just flare the gas. So one of the state visits, one of the outcomes of the state visit to Angola was to say, let's have an engagement on how we're going to get that gas rather than to have it flared. And also we have quite a lot of discussions with the Mozambique through their Demani field, and also Kudu through their gas source, to say, let's create a market for South Africa. But unless people have a sense, unless the suppliers of gas can have that sense of certainty regarding the market, then we are not going to be able to achieve that. So that's why we have to have this strategy that says, this is how we're creating the demand, therefore this is the supply that we're going to need, and this is what we need to look at. So with the issues like the landfill site and the biogas digesters, we are really going to be quite keen to try and make sure then that we also utilize that gas. Our concern at the moment with those two areas is that people are not looking at gas as a product that we can use for thermal needs. They're looking at gas as a way to get to electricity. because it's a beneficiated product, it's high risk product, they get more money around that. So that is the only challenge that we have. Maybe we are going to need the reorientation of thinking along those lines. And then with regards to to the state law advisors, I think what we have managed to do now, we've created a relationship with the state law advisors such that we do have a definite date of the 28th of February as the date when they're going to be coming back to us. And so therefore we believe that we should be able to finalize this quickly, because we've indicated to them that we need to start rolling out these regulations so that come winter we know what hiccups are we going to experience in our implementation of regulation, and what is it that we need to change before the before the winter. Because one of the things also we want to do, we're also looking at just getting the industry to say to us, come June 2010 and beyond. But June 2010, as part of the strategy to try and minimize the demand on the electricity, we want a better rollout of the LPG for thermal needs, because the pressure is usually a domestic load, especially when people want to heat up the houses and all that. So therefore, if we can be able then to have that kind of assurance from the industry that, guess what, we have systems in place, and with the certainty around the regulations, we are okay. I think that's what we really need to finalize. And Mr. Mkiza, if you can just complete the technical and also address the issues, how did you also consult with the other stakeholders other than the industry?
Thank you, Chair. I'll just start maybe from the last question moving up. In answering the question, I hope not to in any manner mislead the committee, because sometimes we become enthusiastic and talk about these things as if they are going to happen as we leave this place, and they are just going to go, everything's going to be hunky-dory, then down the line it's not like that. It's fine, it's also like when a situation where the, because in these pilots, the minister came and launched these pilot projects, and people were very much enthusiastic, everything was fine and all that. But now when the rubber meets the road, there are challenges that we have seen with the witnesses that I've alluded to. So it's just that I want to make sure that I don't misrepresent the situation. Now, when yeah, because we just mentioned that Tembisida, at one stage we went there during the launch, there was a old granny there, the issue of people who cannot afford, who can't afford. There was an old granny there, he got the combo, because in terms of the subsidy, the person would get two 9 kg cylinders and then get a heater, and also get a test seal and get a two-place stove for free, only to pay 100 rand, which was subsidized by the department. Now, she had all that, but she could not get a next deal of gas. When we went to the house, it was very, very, very saddening, really. The situation in the house, not even the food and everything, even the house itself. I remember at one stage, the contractors had to assist her in terms of getting her house right, fixed the house. So the problems in terms of household energy, in fact, are broad, because as I've said, if you can't pay for something, it's not accessible to you. People can talk whatever they want to say, but it's just not accessible. So the problems, they talk to other, that's why the thing of saying that together we can do more, I think we can do more, especially when we forge links with other departments and also the different tiers of government. That is where we can be able to achieve. Because even with the issues of fire, if you've got people have experienced fires from electrical connections, where you've got a fire, But now, because most of these electrified houses are nice houses, if you can have a fire here, you can easily contain it. But if you've got a fire in Machochombeni, it's very difficult because the next one will catch fire quickly. And then it becomes, it's not just a question of what happened with the energy carrier, but it's the whole setup that also presents challenges. So when it comes to the specific questions asked here, in terms of the reticulation, I've alluded to the fact that you've got gas, LP gas, and you can also have natural gas, which will then also come in as what we get from Mozambique is methane-rich gas.
Mm.
And then we get it at 120 gigajoules per annum that we have that gas. And we can, well, now they built a plant which I hope in July, around July, we'll be able to launch. It's the one of increasing it from 120 to 147 gigajoules per annum. So that is a gas coming from Mozambique. It's the same gas, the methane-rich gas, so-called MRG, that then goes via the pipeline, the gas pipeline that goes from Mozambique down and it goes down to Devon. That is the gas. And there is a commission, Mozambique South Africa Gas Commission, that is the agreement that is between these two countries to get the gas from the Banded Imane into Sasol, where they use the gas for liquid fuels and also use the gas for chemicals in terms of their plant. So you've got the gas coming from Mozambique to Secunda, the demand, and government played a big role in facilitating that. And I also sit as a commissioner in that Mozambique South Africa Gas Commission. And in terms of the that one, you can the circulation is being done because we know there is E. coli gas and spring lights in Johannesburg that deal with the circulation of that kind of gas. And I hope you also heard that sometimes last year there was this issue of competition commission around gas, and it doesn't involve our LP gas per se. It's that the gas being recirculated. And then we've got the in terms of the gas coming from Mozambique, we do have that. And we are also in constant consultation with the Mozambicans to try to synergize and realize our gas agreement in terms of gas trade between the two countries. We also have got a gas commission with Namibia, but the Kudu gas has not as yet realized the gas that we need at the moment. So we are dealing with that. And then when it comes to gas from landfill sites, we are looking at that, as the DG has alluded to it. And the main thing also is this, the mindset change and the focus being that of trying to use that gas directly for heating instead of converting it to electricity and then using it. The reticulation, as I've added earlier on, is that I went through some blocks of flats in Sentin where we're looking at the reticulation of LP gas, because we must do it over shorter distances. So you bring the LP gas, instead of taking the cylinders, you just reticulate it, put the pipelines, and then it goes into your flat, your kitchen. So in terms of that, I think with that one of things also scared of gas. What I've noticed is that some people living in those flats, they just keep using it. They are not really aware that much that they are using gas. So, and it's safe and everything is fine, you know. So sometimes you get scared when someone tells you maybe afterwards that, by the way, for your own information, you are using gas. and then when it comes to the people that want to come in terms of the LP gas, there's a desk in the LP gas sector association that is a BE desk in terms of their board. So we are liaising closely with this person in the it's a lady, Nadine. In fact, she's here in Cape Town. And then we are liaising closely with her in terms of promotion of the BE, in the gas market, and the gas industry, I mean. And also in all the meetings, the annual conferences, this gas association, we participate and watch and want to promote the And I will have had a meeting specifically for HDSA, which is Hitler-Rated Africans. We have had specific meetings with them to see what their challenges are and how we can assist them. And if, even ask them to say, don't do this thing of saying that IMBE, you come in, and when you are in, you want to close the door for others. That we've discussed with them, but it's a problem that is difficult to handle, but we are in discussion with them. We have also had a situation where we said to them, there's nothing stopping you from forming a board, so you can consult us, I mean, in a unified manner. But the problem is that instead of them going ahead with forming that board, they then fought among themselves, if I can just put it bluntly like that. They then never had an agreement so they can engage us properly. So this is why we said we're going to call the HDSA, FDG players, and call also people far and wide. In terms of our scope, we also try to take it far and wide, in talking to the consumer, talking with the people that we know, when we publish this thing for Gazette. So we publish for Gazette to solicit public comment. And when we got public comment, one thing that we learned way back in 2006 is that whenever you publish any piece of legislation for public comment, someone else says, I'm happy with this legislation, and doesn't comment. Somebody else comments, and we sit there as a department, we take that comment, but by this person commenting is now triggering the other person to comment on this comment. So whenever we've got comments, we then have a stakeholder engagement process where we say, these are the comments that we've received. Mm-hmm. The law says here we are not going to accept them. It says we need to duly consider them. So now we are going through that process. If you've got problems with this, please clarify to us, the one who commented, what it was. And the ones that are sitting there will have an opportunity to say, to oppose that. Sometimes we sit there, we are more spectators sometimes, just looking at the people having a go at each other. So that is how we do the consultation process. We go out, we sometimes consult, but our door is always open when it comes to the issues of police, and have discussions, and then come up with the legislation, and then we publish for public comment in the Gazette, and then we get them, then a stakeholder workshop. After a stakeholder workshop, we close everything, we publish, and the promulgation in finance. And then, when it comes to the Basa Njengomagogo, there is this, the challenge that we have, that sometimes there is a view that certain energy carriers should cease or whatever because there are these and these problems. I think at how we need to look at things that we need to make do with what we have the best way that we can. When we've got paraffin, let's see how we handle paraffin the best way we can, because it doesn't make sense for us to say to stop this thing and we can't provide them an alternative. Better make sure that they can use this safely and they can get it at a reasonable price, and you provide all the systems. The same thing with Basa Njengomagogo is not something that we would like to have going forward, but it's the best that we can do because there are people that still use coal. For example, in the high fest, you know, stuff like go and stay with those people, and you can see that they are using the coal here. And for you now to say that you must not use this coal, you need to provide something so they can use the coal in the interim while maybe we are developing, so you can provide something that is sustainable and feasible for them. Then when it comes to the poor people having to go and buy the gas, that is part of what we considered here. It both is in line also with the empowerment of women and children, if we look in from that perspective, because it's mainly them that are engaged with these house chores, and they're the ones that must go and buy this LPG. And the problem in Texas, they don't allow you to come with this gas. So if you've got the industry plan closer to the people, the distances are shorter. The system was such that the supplier can even deliver. And if you get a system that is even more sophisticated, you can even get this thing managed via a cell phone. When a person is short, it triggers it because most people have got cell phones, e-phones, and then you can go and deliver. This is how we envisage it to be done. So in that manner, you deal with the issue of people having to go long, to take long distance to buy LPG. And then there is no specific reason really why we're taking out the 14 kg cylinder. We are just including those. There can be a change in terms of using a certain percentage of 14, 19, etc. But there is no, we're not excluding 14 kg cylinders. It's from a point of using it as a basis of calculation. As you know, the difference between a 14 and 19 wouldn't be that much. And then when it comes to the educational strategy, I would say that I concede that we need to look at educational strategy. In fact, last year in November, there was the Ethic and Safety Association annual conference, and the minister undertook undertook to work together with the department to make sure that there is educational campaigns that are undertaken in respect to LPG. So we are going to need to check up, and this is where our cooperation with DOL also comes in. In terms of the jobs created, as you can see, it's a bit difficult for me to really say X number of jobs. But we're looking at, for example, there will be a person who's manning the site. There will be, this is the manager of the site, for example. You'll have two drivers. You'll have people also that will be helping with the distribution to and fro of the cylinders. You'll also have maybe cashiers that are employed there. So it's mainly from that angle, and because this thing is closer to the community, we're looking at a radius of not more than 20 kilometers for this bulky filling plant. So it's people that are in the community. And it can also serve as a springboard for other businesses, small businesses, because they've got the energy instead of maybe using electricity, and also noting the prices of electricity, which will become competitive with LPG. Then they can use LPG in terms of running their small businesses. And then the refineries. We cannot expand the refineries currently to deal specifically with LPG. Because with petrol and diesel, they come from the same crude oil. But diesel is heavier than petrol. So those components, they go out, they go to diesel. Then we've got components sitting here, the middle distillate, what they call that, which is the diesel. You've got all the gunk, the tar, going out as the heaviest. Then you've got petrol, which is a bit lighter, it's lighter than diesel, which you take the petrol and you use it in the car. Now the challenge is that with petrol there is a specification for the vapor pressure, because the specification tells you how much of the petrol can evaporate easily. And then you bought petrol, but in terms of the quantity, the other components is evaporated. Butane, propane, the LPG is part and parcel of that component that is lighter. That then tends to evaporate easily. And the vapor pressure specification is then violated because of that. So that is why in summer, when it is very hot, they cannot put more of LPG into petrol. Now, come winter, they can put that LPG, although it's a certain amount. Now the challenge is, if they can put LPG in the petrol pool, and you come, you say, no, put it in LPG, the prices must be comparable to incentivize them not to take it to fuel, but to take it to LPG. And at the same time, as the countries who are sitting, we've got the challenge of fuel. So there is a scope really of increasing, if not much. But we're hoping that by zooming into the refinery gate price, we may be assisting, but it's going to be very minute. All it boils down to is us being able to import the LPG. unfortunately, because of the northern and the southern hemisphere, at the time when we need it most, they don't need it most the other side, because it's warm, it's warmer, because it's cold on our side. So from that end, we can get, and we must look at importing it. And then, lastly, I would like that to say that in terms of monitoring systems, we are going to it's the engagement, as I've said, and cooperation with other stakeholders, and also we've got a monitoring and an enforcement unit from our side. It would also entail expanding their functions to cover this one. When it comes to, I think I've spoken to the issue of stakeholder engagements. I don't think there is anything, maybe I can be reminded if I've left out something.
In terms of the monitoring and enforcement, I would like to know how many people are there, how are they going to do this job? Secondly, your answer on the jobs created to me is not acceptable. You should have a number. I mean, this was a pilot project.
Yeah.
To start with, you mentioned 3 places, ne? Surely.
Two places.
No, I had 3. Atonville, where's the Tlemcene?
Tlemcene Municipality.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then you must then have a sense of this particular pilot project, how many jobs were created.
Okay.
Even if it was not permanent job at that particular time to deal with the project. But also, as you move forward, you must have some projections or estimates. This can create so many jobs. Not just a blanket thing that you know, will create. No, we don't want that. You want to work from something that can, because as we deal with our oversight work, we must hold you accountable to say, this is what you said. But now it's like an open-ended thing that you don't get a sense of what is it that we're going to be doing.
Okay.
So those to me are the two follow-ups that I think we should have some answers that are convincing. As of now, those answers were not convincing to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure other members would like to do. Honorable Tindo?
Sorry, thanks, Chair. Mine is for, I just want to know when is your, do you have time frame as to when this thing is going to roll out? Because you've been talking about this for quite a long time, and I can see that you really did a study. You've got very good intention, but when are we going to see that gas is rolled out for everybody to access gas? Because really now it's difficult for everybody to access gas. Mm-hmm. Gas is not that like electricity. Yes.
As part of the discussions at the time is that there's no regulation. I mean, everybody charges the way they like, double the price sometimes, it depends where you are, for the same thing and the same quantity, but you're charged more. So that is, we do now have a sense of where the process is, wait for the state law advisor. We should be better off, I mean, to have air regulation rather than petrol is easy, you know the price. I mean, either in coastal areas or whatever, you have a sense of the price. But this one, everybody charges the way they like. And I didn't get it clear to deal with the middle person as to what is it that we're going to do, because that is a critical issue. That you might have a very good policy, but implementing it, I can hear you talking BEE, whatever. Once you talk BEE, people think other things. Being others, let them front, let them do whatever. And we find that then doesn't give us the ultimate outcome. So we are very key on outcomes. We had that is the marching order from the president. Outcomes. What is it that we expect to get from this?
Okay. Can I? Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm a man of authority and I'm under authority, so. So I must submit to authority, so that's why I'm looking the other side. Yeah, in fact, when it comes to the issue of the rollout. That's the late one. The rollout, because they've been hiring pilots, and by the very nature of the word pilot, it means you're just doing something for purposes of learning so that you can expand, depending on what you learn and correct. And the pilots, we have now looked at the closure. We've thought that the best for us to do is to consider one, handing it over to an SOE as part of the recommendation, so the SOE can run with the pilots. Two is to put it on tender so that we get the request that people who, with taking cognizance of the government imperatives, for them to then, like, for example, those people must come in, must be empowered to run with these projects, this community project. Now, the first stage we've explored the first stage. We've given Petro SA all the details of the pilot, and we've said to them, they must acquaint themselves, look into this pilot and see if they can be able to take it over and run ahead with it. With providers of also making sure that whoever runs the pilot sticks to the envisaged objectives, achievement of objectives by government. So that is a process of moving on with the issue of the rollout. Considering also the tightness of budgets for other governments of late. And then when it comes to the people, the employment, I will say that we look. There's going to be the owner of the business, the manager, and then we've got a site person working on the site. Then we've got a security in that particular site. All right. In terms of that, you can have two securities working there. For example, people that are employed. As I said, you've got the operations manager. You've got the security. You've got the cashier. You've got the two drivers. Those are mainly the people being employed. Sometimes what these guys can do, they can talk to the guys in the area who are having a retail outlets. So they get nearer, even more nearer to the people, to be centers of distribution. And they could be indirect job. But I don't want to hype this as a job creation initiative, just to make to note it from that angle.
Okay.
And when it comes to...
It's not a big job creator.
Hello?
What you're saying? Then it's not a big job creator. It's
yeah, it's not a big job creator.
Yeah.
No, not. I'm saying it's not a big job creator like you would envisage if you are building a big plant. You know, like if you were to talk of a refinery and what it will do in a particular region, you wouldn't talk it in the same scope. But it does create that job for those few individuals that are involved. Roughly looking about six people.
Six or eight
people including me. Yeah.
And then
if you then start, because you then you would have to have more sites, like if you're looking at how thing alone, you can have five sites or just post a small area but a lot of densely populated, you can have that. So the more you roll out, the more you have employment from that regard. And I've not spoken about the issues of secondary employment that emanates from the availability of the gas to use for small. For example, if people are welding and they're using whatever thing that needs to heating that they are using, they can use this LP gas.
To answer on that one, I think we have to come back to you maybe with the kind of projections, but I think eventually what we need to be able to say, if we have got so many sites that are going to be rolling out it, with so many people that we are likely to be employed per site, therefore the figures we're looking at would be so much. So at this point, I think we'll have to, even if it means writing it back to you, because I don't think we have done that quantification of such a creation.
Mm.
You've
going to do that, I think you have to come back to us. But also, you yourself, you correctly said, a pilot project is a pilot project, it ends.
Mm-hmm.
But on this one, I don't get a sense, yes, you're going to hand it over to Petro SA, just dealing with the gas issue, but on this particular one, how many jobs will create? Still, year six, whatever, if you want to start a plant. We're not talking starting a plant. We're talking this very one that you told us, Tembisila and Atrangeville.
Oh,
those are the
okay,
two places.
Okay, okay. No,
that
no,
is the one that I don't
no, I
hear the answer coming
mm-hmm.
out.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, for those who want to start a plant, I see that is how many people paid, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them paid a lot of money for a Moranian startup. Think you can't pay a manager 39,000
okay.
whatever, and then, but those are issues that we can discuss outside.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's on the.
Which one? Okay.
Yeah, the supply.
As I mean, maybe to clarify it further, if you hand it over to Petro SA, it will be a program now or whatever it is. It can be ongoing pilot.
No, yes.
A pilot project, as you say, is something that is there to test whether people can use or not use or whatever. And then you see, then you say, oh, well, there's epitaph, whatever, then we can move on.
Okay.
That is all what you're saying.
Okay.
And I think we are understanding each other. Mm-hmm. I couldn't speak more.
Yeah, thanks, Jay. Yeah, I mean, as you got on, my mind is taking over on some of these issues. Excuse me for taking you back a bit. I'm just wondering, I mean, as far as I see it, I mean, this needs to be part of your kind of integrated energy planning in terms of looking at how much will gas replace other fuels and then looking at it from a various consideration such as job creation, import intensity, all of those kind of considerations need to come into it. But as far as I see it, I mean, there's two different replacements here that it could happen. In terms of kind of middle class households, I think that it's a great demand side management tool. So it's about how do you get middle class households to turn over to gas as a way of reducing electricity demand. And I'm wondering what the role of municipalities would be in terms of actually pushing such an initiative. In terms of working class, well, in terms of poor households, the issue there, I think, is what fuel is this replacing? Is this replacing paraffin? I mean, is that what we're looking at here, or is that replacing electricity? And I'm interested in the pilot project as to what did people change over from in terms of that. And you said that most people did change over and were happy to change over. And what were some of the constraints? Because I'm looking at, is pricing a problem for poor households in terms of gas at the moment? And if it is, and if we're looking at replacing gas or replacing paraffin with gas, I see here that one of the cost things here is actually VAT. And I think paraffin is zero rated for VAT. Is this something that we're considering as well, is perhaps zero rating gas if it's going to be going towards poorer households? Because that could be a way of bringing that price down and looking at that kind of pricing structure.
I just want him to catch his breath. On the issue of the pilot was structured like this. We looked at the area where they use electricity even for cooking and the area where they don't have electricity, they use other forms of energy for cooking. In Tembisile, it was your paraffin and also biomass, it means wood, cow dung, and all that. Now, what we were saying on the in Atrichville, we saw a lot of movement of electricity in particular. In other words, lots of people started using gas for cooking. The biggest, with regards to LPG, especially for you and I who've got an electricity stove, it's not so much as sometimes as the price of the gas itself, it's the actual appliances. Gas stoves, until recently, Gas stoves have been very, very expensive. So as such, that's the reason why when we went into the pilot, we said, let's remove the biggest barrier, which is the appliance, by providing the appliance and making sure that people are utilizing them. So at Tembisile, where they were using paraffin and biomass, because in some of in Tembisile, we find that people actually are not searching. They still have got to buy the wood. So it worked out a lot easier for the people. And what is happening is that it's clear that it's even if the pilot is not we are not there. In terms of a pilot, there is likely to continue to be an uptake as long as the gas is available. So that is the issue. With regards to the issue around VAT and zero rating, we're not even begun to have a discussion with the Treasury. So we're not considering at this point in time. What we're simply just looking at, because we're of the view that once the gas is available, it's going to also put lots of pressure on the appliances manufacturer to bring the cost of the appliances down quite significantly. So that's basically where we are looking at the moment. So I think, I'll repeat again that with the LPG strategy, what we're saying there is that the strategy is going to outline what is going to be the rollout strategy, how do we address the barriers we identified in the pilot, how do we roll it out even to the higher LSM? And what we're saying there is that municipality has got to play quite a significant role in areas where reticulation can be done, because in terms of the constitution, it's still the competence of the municipality to do the reticulation of the gas.
Yes. Thanks. I think the DG has touched on a lot of the issues that I wanted to talk about, but it's mainly on the strategy, because when we were busy with the regulation, we realized that actually we require a strategy, a holistic strategy to deal with this. I think, first of all, regulation was not our first choice. We were forced into this because, all the talking about regulation did not yield the results. So we are now at that stage. But also, I just want the committee to note as well that the model that we've gone for will also, in the short term, have some unintended consequences in the short term. It will bring down the price, definitely. But of course, I think part of the delay for us and the team, in fact, was that to say, what do we do with this middleman? We're taking out the middleman, but what do we do? Because the middleman is a job creator. So that is what we've been, really struggling with, is that we're removing these jobs that are created by the middle person in favor of bringing gas closer to the people. But then the way we were able to resolve this was to say, well, in the process of actually rolling out, because the price will actually create a demand, and those people then can then be able to be, absorbed into the, distribution, or maybe in those plants that will be created in the various townships. But in the short term, I think there is going to be some concern that removing the middle person will actually lead to some job losses. Then I think also it would be important for us to indicate to the committee that there are 40,000 outlets at the moment. So for us, in terms of policing pricing, it's going to be quite a task. because it is actually getting to those, to making sure that we receive. That's where we're going to require the public then to also inform us where actually the prices have not come down. Then the last issue from my side is the role of the state. We cannot achieve this without the intervention by, in our view, PetroSA. There has to be a state entity involvement in this, because for some of the players, it may not make business sense in the short term, but I think in the long term, you know, the once we've catalyzed the market, then there will be opportunities there. In Indonesia, they've actually done this. They've actually moved people away from paraffin into LPG, and they've done it in 3 years. However, they use their state-owned company to do that. They distribute 3 kilos and 5 kilos in cylinders to poor households, and they've done it very successfully. It's those models that in the strategy we will be looking on to try and see whether we can replicate that in the country, particularly to deal with energy poverty. Thanks.
Okay. I've been covered with that one, because in terms of the zero rating, also paraffin, also we are going to deal with that as part of the process. But up to now, LPG has been viewed more as a luxury fuel. So as we move and we massify it, that is when the issue of the vetting, removing the vet, would be considered.
Okay.
You are waiting for the state law advisors. By the 28th of February, we'll get the response. That is one thing. But on the other side, there were a lot of issues raised by members. We hope that you'll go digest them. And I'm sure, but it's work in progress. Very, very nice piece of work in progress. But we still have to come back to us on some of the issues.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, I mean, if we could get a copy of some of the comments from the stakeholders, because I think it would be very instructive. Particularly, I mean, you're saying that this could squeeze out the middlemen, and I'd be interested to hear what comments you receive from them and how they perceive this way forward. So I think that could be very useful just ahead of these regulations coming to us, to look at those comments.
That is one more additional point. Honorable Moss.
Chair, I think about the presenter was saying about your point you raised about the education on the issue of the case, and also about the awareness campaign. You are saying that they will do it, or they will look in it, and maybe before. Before July, and also maybe bring us as the oversight our players on that awareness campaign.
Yeah, and I didn't hear the answer in terms of the monitoring and enforcement team that you said you do have in the department. How many people?
Maybe my colleague can help me here on this one. But we've got a structure. They are looking at mainly the focus for now has been the liquid fuels. We've got inspectors in all the 9 regional offices. So it will be for the it's more of an extension of that to be able to cover LPG. But as we have said, like the challenge is in terms of capacity, and therefore strategy of working together with communities would be the one that will have to be pursued in doing the LPG monitoring as well.
Thanks, Chair. In terms of the inspectorate that we have, we have three members in every province that cover issues of licensed activity. Now, at this stage, the retailing of LPG is not a licensed activity. And this is something that, of course, we are going to have to look into. However, I think in the short term, they would be able to cover the, you know, excesses, if there are excesses in certain retailers. But we think that if they are, you know, retailers who charge acceptable prices, the members of the public will just go to buy it where it's actually cheapest. And those who are charging excessively may actually end up running out of business. That also we believe, and also if we publicize and say that this is how much you should be paying, then people will be able to do that policing themselves as well. But we'll just from our side then enforce. But they would assist us in pointing as to who is actually you know, exceeding that the retailing price. Well, Chair, I think what I'm saying is that we are counting on also, because with three members of staff covering a province, I don't think that is going to be adequate to cover. I mean, at the moment, we have about 40,000 outlets in the country and about 3 million cylinders in circulation. So it is all, it's going to be, I believe, it requires a number of strategies. One, for us to be visible on the ground as a department. Secondly, educating the public and publicizing what the price should be in a particular area. And then also counting on, you know, members of the public to inform us where there are areas where they are exceeding what is publicized. Similar, I think, to a large extent, I think even in issues of petrol, you know, people know what the price should be, and they are in a way able to then inform us that in that service station, they have not adjusted the prices, and we immediately can respond to that. So we are going to adopt a similar. It's going to be quite complex, I must add, for 40,000 outlets.
Yeah. Sorry, I think you're asking lots of questions here, but I mean, I'm just looking at that figure. You said the percentage markup is 176%. I mean, to me, that indicates that there's massive market failure in this issue here, and that this must be related. I mean, the kind of theory of competition or whatever would say that those markups would be reduced over time as consumers are aware of who's overcharged and who isn't. So, I mean, is that an indication of possible collusion, or is that an indication of that consumers are just not aware that they're being ripped off? Or, well, what is that coming from? And then I'm wondering, I mean, I always remember the, like Coca-Cola, for instance, used to put on their fridges even, recommended retail price of a tin of Coca-Cola is this amount. Now, can we not put this onto the actual cylinders? So that when the cylinders go out, we know that this is the recommended retail price, so the consumer can ask, why are you charging so much over this particular price? I mean, is this not a way of combating that?
I think on the issue of the cylinders, the pricing, the one of the challenges, in fact, that are being faced by distributors here in Cape Town is that some of the cylinders then move to, you know, during the
the vacation, they then migrate and move to maybe Eastern Cape and so on, or some other inland area where the price may not necessarily be the same. And that then would, you know, that would be the difficulty that we would have with that, putting it actually on the cylinder. On the issue of the collusion, I think it's mainly the structure of the industry that to me is a problem, where you have a producer being a major, you know, reseller, being a wholesaler, and actually also being involved in retailing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where I think we need to look at that chain and say, well, ideally you ought to be playing here, and then create, you know, opportunities for other people to play in the wholesaling business and so on. But as we indicated, Chair, the strategy will deal with all those issues. I think this exercise actually is the one that reveals to us that actually the structure of the industry is not, you know, it's not workable, it's not sustainable at all. Some people are making a killing twice. They are, along the way, they are profiting and profiting.
But isn't that linked to the middleman type of things that you said you've got it now, that are going to stop it? Partly. Looking at the very chain and the same person who's doing all this and not giving others a chance. Where then is this thing of the middleman coming in and links with this particular issue?
I think the issue of the middleman, what happens is that these resellers or the bulk wholesalers, they also control the middleman. And they say, you can only buy from us, and you can only sell at this price. So this is but of course these are issues that we will unravel and actually deal with. It's perhaps shared. It requires another briefing.
Just to add on that, generally, even if you look at the white paper and everything, the issue of vertical integration comes up as a constant problem. And legislation, when it came in, it wanted to do away with this vertical integration. And because it was ingrained in the whole supply chain of whatever came from refineries, that challenge, we still face it in today, even when it comes to liquid fuels, retailing, and it comes to empty gas, we have the challenge. And that is why we're saying that part of what we're doing is also to try to deal with that in terms of the removal of the middleman by us having only recognizing the optimized value chain in terms of pricing.
Well, this particular problem, and I don't know why we have allowed it. I mean, to go on the session. Maybe there's something that I don't know.
Sorry, just my last point. But I mean, surely this is something that should have been taken to the Competition Commission as well. I mean, this should really be investigated. I mean, if that is the case, and people should be looked into. I mean, and has any study been done by the Competition Commission into this?
Is that the one that you say that it needs another briefing? Okay.
Respectfully, yes, Chair.
Yeah, this is supply. Yes, because that connection is made, we have the pipeline that went to the
Okay, it looks as if you've got many gray areas here that needs to be. You should get, I'm sure, a briefing. I'm not sure when. You try to look at our program and see, but totally nothing. We've also been joined by a member of the ARO committee, Honorable Slap. We received your apology and accepted it. But we welcome that you still think about the committee and come back to the committee. Hard-working member of parliament. Okay. Mama Tirela and Mons, let's try to come to wrap up here.
Yeah, I saw on page 22 the upfront of operating expenses. What is it like me? Because you have an acronym here about your personal, your annual expenses. And on the center, I was thinking what the person was saying was, well, this thing is actually creating jobs and how many jobs. So I just want to know, you know, explain this slide to make sure that I can understand to which operation it will maybe. Maybe it's according to on that slide. And the other one is on page 24 about creating opportunities for SDSA participation in the sector. Is the one also? I want, maybe you must explain that.
Okay. Like
I've explained in terms of how we envisage this thing going forward, because I think the question was also on how it has looked at the two pilot sites. These operating expenses deal with the various expenses that the company will incur in running the operation. And this is why we're looking at the personnel to say you will need one manager and have two staff members there and a plant operator and have drivers who are going to be delivering the LP gas. And a handler, that is a person who is going to take this LPG, put it on a weight, take it in, fill, and then weigh it again. And then the secretary is going to deal with also the functioning, the general secretary of the functions of the company. And then you have the company contribution here will entail also the subscription to the association and the overheads in running. So this is what we have said in terms of the mid-sized plant. This is what we're looking at. And just the other question was on HDSA empowerment. What I'm saying is that in terms of, because one of the issues that when it comes to also licensing would be to ensure that the people that play that are licensed in terms of wholesaling and retailing of LPG, when we go to the licensing dispensation, is that they are empowered and not get people who are not empowered being getting licensing. It's going to be one of the criteria for getting a license.
How much is the license?
The licenses are since 500 rands for the license currently. And I think for wholesale or retail, it's 1,000. Yeah, 1,000. Yeah. No, just from my side, I'd just like to thank the committee, the chair, and everybody involved for this. And we hope that you are keeping us on check on our toes.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's interesting, and especially now, being the emphasis, we've noted also the emphasis on outputs. And I think also my colleagues have heard about that one. Thanks a lot.
Okay. I will see that Kabazela is just happy that you're calling him with his Tarazela sack. So that's what makes him happy.
No, no, that's okay. And then we'll see what then we do with the question of our oversight work in terms of this. Because I think some of these things is better to do unannounced oversight work. Because if you can tell me what to go and see, and be silly, hey, you'll go there, talk to those people, and they'll be prepared for us, and all that. So we've got the areas where we said it doesn't. So we see from our side, when do we undertake such an oversight work, just to go and see as to what is happening there, so that as we meet with ourselves, we are in a much, much better condition. But that one we'll deal with it later on. Otherwise, I think we thank you very much from the department, and we hope that next time we'll get much more encouraging results and feedback. As of now, it's just a mixed bag type of, but not really happy with some of what we had. Some are beyond your limitations as a department, but I believe there's a lot that we can get from ourselves. With that, I think we thank you very much. Good luck in your endeavor. And then we'll then meet again. And I'm sure you've heard, TG, let me take this opportunity while you're here. You had the marching orders from the president. There were lots of issues regarding energy that were referred and mentioned. So there's a briefing that we'll do with you to come and discuss those, but safe to say that you've got a lot of challenges that to deal with, including all those that are part of the accord, the Copenhagen Accord, also hinges on a lot of your work. So we hope you are taking those challenges, and they will come back to us with a lot of briefings and work in progress in terms of where we stand. But we are also, as we heard from the Minister of Environment and Water, we are hosting COP17.
Yeah.
That is next year, 2011. We are under much pressure now to move with speed on some of renewable energy projects. Some are hanging, some what.